40, rock critic Ken Tucker hosts Hearing Secret Harmonies. Today he'll feature recordings by Roxy Music. With me now on Fresh Air is John Zogby, the national field representative of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. This national organization has 44 chapters and about 17,000 members. The group opposes discrimination, ethnic slurs, and racism directed against Arabs. They've protested advertisements, newspaper cartoons, and press coverage which has been racist or biased, and they've lobbied Congress on such issues as Israel's invasion of Lebanon. Zogby says that Arabs are the last ethnic group it's legitimate to pick on in America. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee was founded in 1980 by former Senator James Abaresque and my guest brother James Zogby. John Zogby is of Lebanese descent. His parents moved to America before he was born. He lives in central New York, where he founded the Utica Citizens Lobby in 1976, a public interest organization. In 1981, he ran for Democratic nomination for mayor of Utica. He's been a history professor of political science and history at Mohawk Valley Community College and the State University of New York College of Technology. As part of his work with the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, he's traveled around America organizing local chapters and speaking to community groups. If we have time, we'll open up the telephones for your questions and comments a little later on in our discussion. John Zogby, welcome to Fresh Air.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you elaborate on that statement that Arabs are the last ethnic group in America it's legitimate to pick on?
You know, the lessons in American history, a country that is ethnically rich, I think show us that as many ethnic groups as we have here in the United States, racism and ethnic slurs have been very much a part of our history. And until racial and ethnic groups organize to protest discrimination and defamatory images, then those kinds of ethnic slurs continue. And so most of the major ethnic groups in the United States have organized and have made their feelings known about defamatory images. Arabs are really the last to do that. And so it will remain legitimate, and Americans will remain ignorant of what an insult it is to slur ethnics, you know, until we make our feelings heard.
Let's look at some of the ways that this discrimination is expressed currently in America. Let's start by looking at some of the ads that your group has protested.
There's been a dual image of the Arab promoted in advertisements and all the media, actually, not only advertisements but also TV entertainment and movies and school textbooks, etc. And the dual image of the Arab, unfortunately, is the greedy sheikh, who is somehow in some way conspiring to destroy the economy and our way of life in the United States, and on the other hand, the terrorist. And so we've seen that in the form of ethnic scapegoating. Down in Tampa, Florida, a series of billboards. And these are examples of among hundreds of such things. Drive an Arab crazy, buy a Toyota. And the logo featured with the advertisement is of the greedy sheikh with a gas nozzle in his hand and a sinister look on his face. In Wellesley, Massachusetts, for 6 years a product on the market, it called sheiks, a recycled fuel in the form of an Arab head-dressed figure. Save oil, once again that scapegoating image, wrongly blaming Arabs for the economic crisis in this country. But save oil, burn sheiks. And it is of an ethnic representative, the Arab sheik burning at the stake. There's been a whole variety of such things. Niagara Mohawk Power Company in upstate New York, Consolidated Edison in downstate New York, featuring the same advertisements, blaming New York State's economic troubles on too much dependence on foreign oil. And when those words are stated, the image of Gaddafi or the image of Sheikh Yamani of Saudi Arabia are conjured up. And the truth is that in the entire Northeast, we only get 7% of our oil from the Arab Middle East. And so the scapegoating is dangerous. It's wrong economically, but it's wrong also morally, because we have lessons what can happen to an ethnic group if it's steadily scapegoated and stereotyped.
What are some of the political and newspaper cartoons that you've cut out because they've been racist?
Well, you know, just generally speaking, what we have discovered, this dual image of the Arab in the United States, we call the other anti-Semitism, very simply because the same image that's conjured up of the Arab is the same image that the Nazis conjured up of Jews. You know, it was the Rothschild conspiracy the 1930s, the 1920s and 30s, that were blamed for Germany's decline, and also the international communist Jew who was blamed for destroying the working class and the economy from the bottom up in Germany. And so we've been very sensitive when we've seen a number of our major cartoonists in the United States, Herb Bloch, Oliphant, Benson, the syndicated people, who in many ways have been using almost the same exact cartoons and the same exact captions underneath the cartoons that the Nazis had used against the Jews. I wish that I were exaggerating, but the truth is that I'm not. And so we've gone after Benson. He writes for the Arizona Republican and is syndicated in about 90 to 100 newspapers in the United States. Yasser Ararat is one cartoon that I remember very strongly, regardless of how one feels about the PLO or one feels about Yasser Arafat. And we, of course, take no stand on any foreign government or Middle East sector politically. Fact of the matter is, when you portray a world leader, an Arab leader, a legitimate Arab leader, as an animal, you're talking about something dangerous. And well, so we had to get an apology.
What was the cartoon?
The cartoon was of Arafat as a rat. Yasser Ararat, and being trapped by the Star of David, something which I would tend to believe would not only be offensive to the hundreds of Arab Americans who responded, thousands who responded throughout the United States, but also to many American Jews as well.
In 1981, your group organized a campaign against the Merriam-Webster thesaurus for the synonyms that they gave for Arab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the... They say that the synonyms are outmoded, but actually what they are preposterous. Arab is defined as vagabond, street peddler, criminal, street criminal, and a whole variety of other terms synonymous more with swine or scum of the earth. And the fact of the matter is that perhaps this term may have been widely used in some circles, perhaps 1,000 years ago, when during the Crusades, Europeans for the first time met the Muslim, quote, infidel, unquote. But the fact of the matter is, for a legitimate thesaurus and the most popular thesaurus to be propagating that kind of racial slur is wrong. We won a victory against Roget's thesaurus and got them to excise that term. Merriam-Webster, unfortunately, in the interests of what they call linguistic purity, have refused to date to remove that negative slur of Arabs.
Was the word Jew used synonymously with other things in that?
It was in Roget's. And I think because, you know, we are devoted to combating all forms of anti-Semitism. And if we get a second later on, I'll give you some of the anti-Jewish statements that we have protested. But to answer your question, in Roget's thesaurus, when we protested both Jew and Arab in their negative connotations, both were removed. Merriam-Webster does not have a negative connotation for Jew. It only has a negative connotation for Arab. And so perhaps maybe that's the reason we haven't had much luck with them to date.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with John Zogby, and he's with the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. Why do you think it is that Americans who wouldn't dare say anything against Jews or blacks would feel comfortable saying something racist about Arabs? And of course, I'm not including all Americans in this, because plenty of Americans feel comfortable saying racist things about lots of different groups. But a lot of people who consider themselves pretty liberal on things will be quite comfortable saying racist things about Arabs.
You know, it's any combination of things. For starts, there are many Arab Americans like myself who have spent our entire life being American, trying to be as American as apple pie. We are, of 3.5 million of us, we are noted for joining the mainstream of America economically and professionally and business-wise right away. And so many people may be comfortable slurring Arabs, not knowing, hey, John Zogby's an Arab. Gee, I never thought of it that way. You know, he's just an American kid who grew up in Utica. I think another problem is the tendency to oversimplify. You know, you have a complex problem like, why has America declined economically? Well, according to Governor Milliken of Michigan, you want to blame those damned Arabs for the decline of Detroit. The tendency to find an oversimplified version to explain to the public a very complicated problem. I blame to some degree the news media, perhaps unwittingly. You know, the average reporter dealing with the oil crisis says, I've got to somehow explain to the public what has happened in the oil crisis in a 30-second report. Well, immediately the image of the Arab sheikh, then that explains it. Even though OPEC is only half Arab, and we get throughout most of this country most of our oil from Venezuela, now Mexico, also Nigeria, and not indeed from the Arab countries. So there's a tendency to oversimplify, and there's a tendency also on our part, as Arab Americans, to have not come out front as Arab Americans, but to try to be American first. That's changing now.
Were there international events or political events in which you feel racism was escalated?
Oh, sure. By all means. The Iranian crisis. You know, this country does not understand Eastern cultures very well. I don't think we ever learned anything about the Iranians after the Iranian crisis. But the problem is there was a confusion between the Iranian crisis and what is Arab. And we found that a number of Arab students throughout the United States were beaten up on campuses. For example, the University of Houston and in Phoenix, Arizona, because they were mistaken for being Iranians. I think another crisis, international crisis, that had an impact was the so-called Libyan hit squads. Nothing ever really materialized about that, but it made wonderful copy in the news media for a while. And, of course, that has a negative impact upon us and our people.
How do you interpret ABSCAM?
Well, you know, as Americans, certainly we're concerned, are there crooks in Congress, or are there, did the FBI overstep its bounds? But as Arab Americans, the question is, would there have been a Jew scam? Would the FBI have dressed men up in yarmulkes, you know, Shylock types, to use the old slur, and offering congressmen bribes? I know that when I mentioned that to a reporter once on the air, she said, shh, don't say that. We'll be in trouble. The telephones will start to light up. And they should light up. I mean, that's wrong. It's absolutely preposterous. There would have never been an Italian scam. So the question is, why did a responsible federal agency deem it fit to dress men up as Arabs? I think to us, the ethnic slur has reached a crisis phase. And I say that very simply for this reason, that if you can continuously scapegoat and stereotype an ethnic group, you dehumanize that group. I sincerely believe that the FBI didn't believe it was doing anything wrong because it became mainstream. That's the only image that people have of Arabs. If you dehumanize, you can victimize. And for those like me who grew up comfortably American, I think ABSCAM and perhaps that product Sheikhs and Governor Milliken's statement in Michigan to the state legislature about blaming those damned Arabs drove the point home that perhaps if the United States became involved in a war in the Middle East, it wouldn't be on the Arab side. What would happen to us? Perhaps the same thing that happened to the Germans during World War I, to the Japanese during World War II. And for those who say, well, it can't happen here, not only did it happen here, but in the case of the Germans, especially during World War I, a very respectable, reputable ethnic group that came to the United States, came here right to Pennsylvania, right after the Mayflower, immediately became the Hun overnight. Unfortunately, over the last 10 years, there has been a steady negative image of Arabs. In such a crisis like a war, where would our friends be? That's why we have to organize.
Do you think that racism affects the American perspective on Middle East politics?
Oh, by all means. There are active groups in the United States, and I'll name them, AIPAC, our brothers and sisters in the B'nai B'rith, Anti-Defamation League. They are the chief proponents of anti-Arab racism in the United States today, and I'm ashamed to tell you that. Because when we began, we tried to work with B'nai B'rith as brothers and sisters to battle all forms of anti-Semitism. I'm proud of our record. I think the B'nai B'rith should be ashamed of its record, because what they're attempting to do in the interests of promoting a pro-Israeli, one-sided foreign policy is doing as much as they possibly can to demean Arabs. And yes, racism plays a major role.
You just made a statement. Do you want to give some examples about that? Why you're saying such harsh things about B'nai B'rith?
Yeah, you know, and once again, I don't like saying that, and I perhaps am even reluctant to say it. Example, in Detroit, for weeks, the B'nai B'rith, we have a large Arab American population in Detroit, about 300,000. B'nai B'rith billed a series of debates that would be held at various auditoriums throughout Detroit, featuring a representative of the Anti-Defamation League versus a representative from an unnamed Arab organization. And so people attended the debates. And it turns out that the B'nai B'rith person spoke, and then the Arab dressed in keffiyeh spoke. Keffiyeh is the headdress and wardrobe of many, many Arabs. And the alleged Arab speaker would say the most disgusting anti-Semitic slurs that one could possibly think of. This was the debate. When both speakers were finished, the moderator came up and introduced the alleged Arab as really a member of the B'nai B'rith, posing as an Arab, telling the people in the audience, this is what Jews are up against, and this is what you have to combat. And the truth is, as I travel all over the country, our people, Arab Americans, are not anti-Semitic. There may be some who have stronger feelings than others, especially those who have been booted out of their homes in Palestine.
But
the truth is, I mean, to repeat it, that this kind of activity by the B'nai B'rith, which has been multiplied in other communities throughout the United States, is an effort to promote racism in the interests of a pro-Israeli foreign policy, and that's wrong.
Do you find in personal relations that there's tensions between Jews and American Arabs?
Absolutely not. In the community where I grew up, in Utica, New York, and as well in the communities that I've visited, and I would like to say I've been to 38 states now in the last year and a half, the truth is that most Arabs and most Jews get along very well together, economically, professionally, academically. The political situation is certainly another story. And now with Arab Americans coming out of the closet and demanding justice for Palestinians and sovereignty for Lebanon, you know, perhaps there may be some increased tension. But it's not a personal tension. It's a political one.
You say for the most part you try to separate political issues from the anti-discrimination work that you're doing. What suggestions would you have for people who disagree strongly with the policies of certain Arab countries or Arab leaders in terms of how they relate to individual people from Arab countries?
That's a good question. The fact of the matter is that we are the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. We are American in the sense that we believe in human rights, and we believe that no ethnic group should be slurred, defamed, or victimized. And our record is clear on that. At the same time, we're Arab in the sense that we are, to the largest degree, singling out this problem as it impacts upon people of Arabic descent. One does not have to identify with the Arab governments. One doesn't have to identify with any of the Arab Middle East organizations. The truth is that what we're saying simply is that Arab people and the Arabic culture should not be demeaned, and that if you demean it, you demean all ethnic groups. And if you demean all ethnic groups, you demean what this city is all about, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States.
No, go ahead.
No, that's yeah.
Okay. John Zoghbi is my guest, and he's with the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. And you might have some questions or comments you'd like to address to him. We'll open up the telephones. Our number is 923-2774. We're at area code 215. The number again is 923-2774. Your parents are Lebanese. They moved to America before you were born. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in a family where there was a strong identification and passing on of Lebanese culture?
Yeah, very much so. Not unlike many first-generation Americans, there was a tension as I was growing up. My parents spoke Arabic. My mother taught Arabic, still does for that matter. I wanted to be the American kid who played Little League baseball, did well in school, and did not want to learn how to speak Arabic. In fact, I'm ashamed to say that I don't speak Arabic. all that well. But yes, we did grow up with an appreciation for the culture and a pride in that culture.
What did it mean amongst your circle of friends to be Arab?
It meant that it wasn't going to get me very far. I grew up in a very ethnic neighborhood. I won't mention the predominant ethnic group. But the truth is that another ethnic group dominated and that it didn't pay to be an Arab American or to be a Lebanese. And so there were the usual kinds of taunts that I like to think, kind of prepare you for some of the tougher challenges that you face in life. I'd rather, however, that my children not even have to grow up with the taunts. Unfortunately, the taunts and the slurs that they see, my kids, are on primetime television shows and cartoons and wrestling. Abdullah the Butcher is now the bad guy in wrestling. I was shocked when I saw that. The cartoons, the Saturday morning cartoons on all three networks that feature very negative, fictitious Arab characters. Woody Woodpecker, we just picked up a book by Woody Woodpecker about the Sheikh of Turabia. I mean, that was just appalling. Turns out that my little kids wanted me to read the story to them, and I read the story, but I changed all the names and all the offensive parts as I was reading it to them. It's difficult.
Let's take our first phone call. John Zogby is my guest. He's the national field representative for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. And if you have any questions or comments, our number again is 923-2774, and we're at area code 215. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to basically get an idea about the massacres that occurred in Beirut, in the city of Beirut, the Shaba province piece. I'm wondering possibly if the level of racism is felt by Mr. Zogby to have increased in the United States or to have decreased as a result of that massacre there. And if people at all, if you feel, are making fun of people or if they're at all giving them just honor or due in terms of their death.
Okay, if I understand you correctly, the number one, the impact of the massacres on anti-Arab racism, I in personal relations don't detect any changes whatsoever. We have detected some increased activities on the part of groups, fringe groups like the Jewish Defense League, since the war broke out and since our people, Arab Americans, have become more vocal about negative images. We have had people beaten up in Phoenix, Arizona. We've had people threatened and cross burnings in Los Angeles and Orange County. I personally was assaulted in Utica, New York, as I was handing out leaflets. We have had reports of this, increased reports of this since the war broke out, not specifically since the massacre. The second part of your question, I'm not sure I understand. Could you repeat it?
Basically, would people, say cartoonists, writers, and whatnot, would you think or would you feel at this point that they are actually bringing out the types of horrors that have happened, and in, I guess, your case, the types of just incidental incidents in the United States which are happening around and about?
Just when you think that you've made some sort of progress with cartoonists and with editorial writers, making them aware of the fact that they're doing something wrong, and I give them the benefit of the doubt. I think that many of the anti-Arab cartoons and editorials that we've seen were just based in ignorance. They figured no one would care, so why not bother? And then, there's an OPEC crisis, as there was a few months ago, and on my desk are literally a stack of 2 feet high of mail from newspapers all over the country of anti-Arab cartoons that reappeared. Now with the pullout accord between Israel and Lebanon and Syria's refusal to go along with that, once again, a steady increase in anti-Arab slurs, a confusion between political stands on the part of an Arab country or an Arab group and Arab people in general. Let me cite an example. This is Monday, May 23rd's Philadelphia Inquirer. Anyone know a good Syrian joke lately? This appears in Clark de Leon's The Scene. And I just want to quote a few lines from it. Know any good Syrian jokes? I think it's about time we made up some, don't you? I mean, how can you take Syrians seriously? Later on, he says, the beauty of Syrian jokes is that you won't offend anyone. You can walk out into any bar in any neighborhood and rattle off a string of Syrian jokes without fear of angering a single patron. And so on. I'm going to give Mr. De Leon the benefit of the doubt and say that that was strictly out of ignorance, but I'm also going to say that Mr. De Leon is not only going to hear from us through this show, but he's going to be literally bombarded, first of all, from people here in Philadelphia, and then if that doesn't work, by people throughout the Northeast, and he's going to apologize, and I hope perhaps that we can report that apology right here on this show. Yes, you can walk into a bar in any neighborhood, and yes, you can offend people of Syrian or Arabic descent. That is a lot of junk, Mr. De Leon. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for your call. What would you say to a columnist who'd written something like what Clark Leon has? What would your comment be?
I'd say, for starts, I don't think you meant anything by it. But you should be aware of the fact that there are 3.5 million Americans of Arabic descent who, regardless of any other differences we may have among us, are seriously offended and insulted by that kind of statement, that it doesn't promote goodwill in this country. It doesn't promote world peace at all by alienating us. And that we would request an apology. I'd also send them copies of some of the studies, position papers that we've done about the impact of stereotypes on children, or comparing the anti-Arab slurs of the 1970s with the anti-Jewish slurs in Germany of the 1920s and 30s. And I think probably a reasonable man, he would write back and say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean anything by it.
Okay, let's take another phone call. And if you're just joining us, my guest is John Zogby, and he's the National Field Representative of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. And if you have any questions, the number is 923-2774. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to say that I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. I myself was totally unaware that this problem existed with respect to Arabs. And I think that any kind of humor or cartoons or attitudes which make people think of people in separate groups with a label rather than as all part of the human race are very detrimental to peace. And any way of trying to counteract it is highly commendable.
Thank you. I think what you just said is 10 times better than what I've tried to say over the last 25 minutes or so. Thanks very much for your call. You are one of among many people who've called in with similar calls throughout the United States on similar kinds of shows, and thanks a million.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're on the air.
Hello. I would like to hail the work of your group also.
Thank you.
I'm a Jewish American. I don't affiliate too closely with the Jewish community, except in that when I face anti-Semitism directed against Jews, I identify myself as a Jew. I'm always annoyed by the confusion between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism directed against Jews, and I think that that it's important to distinguish between the Jewish state in the Middle East and discrimination against people of Jewish descent. And I would just urge you to avoid the political defense of the Arab regimes at the same time as your supporting the Palestinian people's rights and supporting the rights of the Lebanese people to live in peace and to have self-determination.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. And I would hasten to just compliment your remarks by saying that Arabs and Jews traditionally have gotten along very, very well in the Middle East. We're all Semites. We're all brothers and sisters.
Well, all people are brothers and sisters.
That's true, too. Thanks for your call.
Sure.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, let me just follow up on his comment. Do you feel that as part of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee that you're expected to defend all of the Arab countries' policies in the Middle East?
This is a cultural thing. To the degree that we're political as Americans. We lobby with Congress. We lobby with legitimate elected officials here in this country for a more balanced Middle East policy on the basis of American values, human rights, recognition of the sovereignty of people. To state it simply, it's hard to defend any of the Arab regimes. And as well, it's hard to defend Israel. There are second-class citizens within Israel, Sephardic Jews. There are third-class citizens within Israel. And then there are, those are the Arabs within Israel. And then there are, God knows, fourth, fifth, or sixth-class citizens, those who live in the occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza. And so we're not going to defend or promote any of the interests of any of the political groupings in the Middle East. Our major concern here is for a more balanced policy, because if we don't have a more balanced policy, we demean the United States first and foremost.
You ran in the Democratic primary for mayor in Utica. Were voters there, and was your opposition aware of the fact that you were Arab, and was that used against you in any way?
Yeah, you know, my record had been as a professor, as an anti-war person, as a consumer advocate, and I woke up one morning to discover that one of my opponents, after I'd gotten a few contributions from some Arab-American cousins and friends throughout the United States, I was being labeled as the Arab candidate, the Arab oil, and the PLO candidate for mayor of Utica. And I was a little baffled to read that on the front page of the local paper. Fortunately, it didn't—I didn't win, but it didn't have much of a play in the election at all, although it did disturb me.
You have two children now. You were telling us before that you read them a Woody Woodpecker children's book that had
Prince of Turabia.
Right. are they getting slurs directed at them currently? I don't know if they're very Arab identified or not.
They're still quite small.
Oh,
they're still quite small. They're preschoolers at this point in time. However, it's amazing to see the degree, the impact that television has on preschoolers, you know, in terms of advertising and in terms of programming. And to inject any anti-Arab slurs via that major news medium can be quite dangerous. And I'm talking about children's television shows. I'm talking about, I mean, my son is 5 years old now and is old enough to understand the news. And when Israel bombed Lebanon, and he was told that Israel, this was in a news segment with during the children's cartoons, Israel had a legitimate right to bomb Lebanon to rid itself of a terrorist organization that denied Israel's existence. It wasn't put quite in those terms. It was put in terms for a child, you know, to understand. And my son understood that. My son understood that. And he came in and he said, why is it that the Arabs don't like the Israelis? And, you know, that really baffled me, and I wondered where he had heard that. And he told me he heard it on cartoons, and I asked for a transcript. That bothered me very, very much. That it was a misleading statement, and it just gave me an indication that no matter how young kids are, there are subtle ways of getting into their minds.
Is there any kind of ethnic humor that you would find acceptable? And I'm thinking here specifically of a Saturday Night Live sketch a couple of years ago. It's been repeated a lot on the syndicated rebroadcast. And it's a takeoff on the Beverly Hillbillies, but instead of hillbillies moving to California, it's some Arab sheiks who've moved in wealthy from their oil but very unfamiliar with Los Angeles customs.
Here's the general rule. We have a sense of humor. You know, I like to think mine's as good as anybody else's. The problem becomes, is it the only image that people receive? You know, blacks went through this, you know, the multitude of films that were made, in, you know, picturing blacks as lazy and shiftless, step and fetch it kinds of characters. If that was the only image that mainstream America was getting of blacks, then it was wrong. If this is the only image, the greedy sheik or the wealthy sheik or the buffoon like Prince Al-Fassi or whatever his name is, if that's the only image that people are getting, then that's wrong. True ethnic humor, I think, can possibly have a place in the United States if it's balanced, you know, with an appreciation for what is right and what is good about people. I don't think we're ready for that yet at all.
I want to ask you again about this. For people in America who are opposed to Arab countries' political policies. What do you feel as an American Arab is an appropriate way of expressing your anger towards official government policy, and what's an inappropriate way of expressing that anger?
Well, you work through Congress. Our policy in Washington, D.C. is horribly one-sided towards Israel. The worst form of discrimination against our people is to have those Americans of Arabic descent have our tax money used for cluster bombs and phosphorus bombs to kill our relatives, our Palestinian and Lebanese relatives in Lebanon, or for our tax money to be used for illegal settlements along the West Bank. That's the worst form of discrimination I could think of. You know, our money is being used, illegal settlements, these are settlements that have been condemned by almost every government in the world, by the United Nations, by the United States government, and yet here is our money being used by the Begin government for this purpose. And so if you want justice in the Middle East, you have to recognize the need for a Palestinian homeland, the need to have all parties sit down and negotiate, and that must include the legitimate representatives of the Palestinian people, the PLO. And it also means an understanding of the need for Israel to withdraw from Lebanon and to reduce its colonization interests. Now, yeah.
That is a political stand, don't you think?
Yeah, sure it is.
Because you were saying that you don't get involved in political stands.
Well, it's a political stand vis-a-vis the American government. I mean, as Americans of Arabic descent, sure we want peace in the Middle East. And sure we recognize that the United States plays, you know, the major role in the world scene. If the United States is playing a role that's horribly balanced, one-sided, towards one of the actors in the Middle East, then it's incumbent upon people like us to say, listen, you've got to have an understanding of what the other side is all about. That doesn't mean that we are the other side. That means that it's got to be us who point the way and say that our people are suffering.
Is there a chapter of your group in Philadelphia?
Oh, there's a great chapter here. Naeem Ayoub and Joan Hasbin, Demetra Haynes, Arab Americans and non-Arab Americans. We have about 500 members, and it's well organized, and they've used the media well. We just won a victory here in Philadelphia with Classic Beer that ran an advertisement in which the greedy sheikh played a major role. When we were told that the ad would be withdrawn immediately, we discovered that 2, 3, 4 weeks later, the ad was still running throughout the Northeast. We just received 3 days ago a letter of apology from Joseph Ortlieb, who's the vice president, saying that he's very sorry, and be assured that they in no way intended to demean us, and we're pleased.
So you think,
that's because of their work.
You think maybe a lot of people are really unaware of how offensive what they're doing would be to American Arabs.
Mm-hmm. I think that ignorance is the real problem. At the same time, unless you have an organization that can point that ignorance, I think we've reached a crisis phase.
Okay, I want to thank you very much.
It's been
for
a pleasure to be here.
Us. I want to thank our listeners who called as well. John Zogby has been my guest. He's the national field representative of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, which does have a branch here in Philadelphia. He's based in upstate New York. It's 18 minutes to 4 o'clock. This is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to WHYY FM in Philadelphia. And coming up at about 4 o'clock, we'll be hearing a National Press Club appearance by Frank Fahrenkopf, who's the chair of the Republican National Committee. And one of the subjects he addressed was public financing of presidential campaigns. And that's coming up in about 20 minutes. Every Wednesday at this time, rock critic Ken Tucker joins us for Hearing Secret Harmonies. And today he'll be featuring the music of Roxy Music.